You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, January 6th, 2010. This is episode 113, celebrating our second anniversary. Welcome back to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast, the second anniversary edition, episode 113. It was 2 years ago that we began. My name is Martin Spriggs. I work for the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod as its CTO, and joining me as usual is Sally Draper. Happy anniversary, Sally.
Well, happy anniversary to you, Martin, and I am over here in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota, working for Wells. Fortunately, from my home, I am the Wells technology trainer, and I told my husband we were going to record the two-year anniversary, and his eyebrows were raised. It's hard to believe that we've been at it for
every week for the last two years. Yeah, it was 2 years ago. I don't know if it's to the day, but to the week, essentially, that we started this podcast. And I don't know if you can remember that far back, but do you remember your initial reaction when I asked you to co-host?
Probably like, you got to be kidding.
And now what do you think?
And now I think, man, you got to be
kidding.
No, it's been a lot of fun. It's been a great challenge for me and a wonderful opportunity to connect with an awesome listener audience out there.
Yeah, I feel the same way. So we're just going to chat a little bit about why we're doing the podcast again. We did the same thing last year at our first anniversary. A little bit about why Wells Tech, and we're going to break it down by category here. We're going to first ask why Wells Tech, then we're going to ask, you know, what we've learned. Hopefully we've learned something over the last 2 years, how it's changed from that initial version, at least in our minds, and then maybe a quick look ahead, what we think the future holds. And then we're going to jump into an interesting interview with the co-founder of the Glow Bible. I'm looking forward to that as well. So, shall we kick her off? Episode 113, why Wells Tech, Sally?
Why Wells Tech? Well, you know, if you take a step back and look at our synod as a whole, we have a wonderful assortment of gifted people out there that are doing some amazing things. But I think Wells Tech is a great way for us to tie all that together and communicate the technology of today from all those different areas. You know, just giving everyone a chance to share their knowledge with the community of techies out there.
Yeah, I suspected, and I think we both suspected, there was a community of those people in ministry situations that were very interested in technology, and not only just in technology, but viewing technology as a valuable tool for ministry. And we hear that over and over, I think, every show, where people are saying, I use this, I use that, but this is how I use it to spread the gospel. This is how I do it to educate God's people. This is how I do it to do that in the classroom, in the Christian elementary school classroom. I also view it personally as an outlet for the daily conversations that I have, advice that I sometimes offer or advice that I get, and just in general, some of the trials and errors that you and I probably both go through when we're dealing with, or in some cases, struggling with technology. So, you know, we're lucky enough to have an outlet to share that with other people and then get feedback from them, and sometimes tips and tricks from them, too.
Absolutely. I think that trials and errors has a lot of power there because, you know, if we all spent our time spinning our wheels and trying to figure these things out, we wouldn't maybe have progressed as far as we have at this point in the use of technology in ministry. So it's wonderful to capitalize on everyone's trials and errors that are going on out there.
Yep. So what have we learned?
I think number one, right off the bat, we can say that it's important if you're going to have some type of ministry initiative. In our case, the initiative to do the Wells Tech podcast is to do it consistently.
Yep.
So, you know, one of the reasons I think we've gained an audience and we respect our audience so much and are happy to have them is because we have been here every week for the last 2 years, you know, consistently putting out the podcast and hopefully to a high enough standard that our listeners appreciate and in return to get more. And I think that carries over to any kind of initiative that is worth doing.
Sure.
In your ministry efforts, you need to do it consistently.
Yep. If you're going to start a web page, make sure you keep it up. If you're going to do a podcast, make sure it comes out on a regular basis, especially as you get people interested and engaged. And that's what we're finding, obviously, with the podcast. I think another thing that I've learned is we really need to focus on ministry, not just technology. You and I both love technology, and it's easy just to kind of immerse yourself in the technology, the new cool stuff, all the Web 2.0 stuff, the free stuff you can download, hardware, all those things are kind of fun. But really where it makes a difference is its impact on ministry. And you know, over and over again, we've got to come back, you know, how is this going to help ministry?
That's right. That whole focus on technology as the servant, not the master.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good, probably a good subtitle for our
right.
podcast,
because yep.
Really important concept and, you know, continually reminding ourselves of that and seeing how these tools can be morphed into mm-hmm. something that can be a benefit to spreading the gospel message.
Yep.
And I also wanted to mention in this segment, you know, the fact that the show website, and in particular this past year, the show wiki, has really become a very valuable resource. So we've learned a lot and we've captured that knowledge, and that is just really exciting to me as I'm able to refer people back or go back myself and look up you know, various things that we've discussed on the podcast, examples of different tools and things like that we can continue to make use of. Maybe something we talk about today isn't going to impact your ministry today. 6 months from now, you can remember, oh yeah, I remember they talked about that, and a quick search will bring up the resources
right.
you need to help you get started with it. So very valuable archive that's developed that, you know, I wasn't really contemplating at the beginning.
Right.
Or seeing that.
Yeah, we totally recognize that not everybody is going to, first of all, listen to every episode, and that's okay, or remember everything that's gone on. And I use this resource just as much as probably anybody else, going back in time and saying, well, I know we talked about that, or I know there was a listener comment about that particular tool that would solve that particular problem. So, boy, that's I think that's a great way to capture the knowledge that's going on here. And that kind of beckons to another thing that I think I've learned is we have really smart listeners. Those people that are willing to contribute to the show make valuable contributions, and I learn from almost every voicemail or email or listserv or Facebook comment. They all bring something to the table, mostly because the comments come from usage in a ministry context. Getting back to that, you know, focus on ministry. Here are people in ministry using these tools for better or for worse, and then sharing their experiences with us.
Yep. Hats off to those listeners. And
yep.
Please keep your comments coming. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to learn from you. And you know, the whole community benefits when you share your knowledge.
Yep. So let's talk a little bit about the evolution of the podcast. How has it changed from our original vision? Sally, as you look at it.
Fortunately, it's changed that we don't have to do all the talking.
Right.
We don't have to come up with all this information. It kind of ties back to everything we've been talking about. But definitely the listener participation is just a huge component of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Evidenced in this show, Martin, is we have a lot of community feedback to share even today. And so I think that was probably the biggest surprise to us is how much involvement our listeners have and how much great knowledge they have to share.
Yep, that's awesome. And then finally, what does the future hold? You know, get out your crystal ball and where are we going, Sally?
Well, I think we're going to plow right on through to our third anniversary show, hopefully.
No plans to stop anytime soon. Lord willing.
Got our schedule, you know, mapped out for a weekly show for 2010 for sure. And we just want to see more and more of these resources build up, you know, especially the wiki or whatever is next in the Web 2.0 world that will allow us to collaborate and share and build our community further.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we're going to continually beat that drum. Community, you know, building the community, make sure you're sharing, make sure you're building building this resource up that's become a network that hopefully is useful, you know, not just to us but to everybody that listens. And that's a great future goal to have, is just to build on what we've done. So, and what, not just what you and I have done, but everybody who's a part of the show, which we view as everybody who tunes in on a weekly basis. All right. This interview that we're going to play now, I'm very excited to share with our audience. I had a good time with the interview, and it's not often that we get to interview a co-founder of a fairly high-profile product like the Glow Bible. We have been singing its praises for a while. Sally, did you get a copy yet?
We did. It was under our Christmas tree this year.
Ah, cool.
Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, I've had it for a while. I picked it up a couple weeks after it came out. I've talked about it at teachers' conventions, and really I'm a big proponent of, you know, the digital Bible concept. And Nelson Saba is the co-founder of the Glow Bible from Immersion Digital. We had a chance to sit down with him and talk to him about what he's doing and where the Glow Bible is going in the future. Very interesting talk. Let's listen to our conversation with Nelson Saba. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast is Nelson Saba, co-founder and CEO of Immersion Digital, and perhaps more important to our conversation, the Glow Bible. Thanks for joining us, Nelson.
Oh, thank you.
Maybe you could introduce yourself a little bit. Tell us a little bit, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, your company, and most importantly, how you became interested in interactive Bible software development.
Yes. So I actually started working in this area of interactive Bible software back in 1996. Mm-hmm. And at that time I had computer graphics as a hobby. And also because of my fascination for the Bible, I started using my hobby to recreate some of what the biblical world was, and particularly the tabernacle, by reading the book of Exodus. And I started to realize the power of this interactive digital media, mm-hmm, to communicate the Word of God in a different level. It can offer you an experience of Scripture. It can really help you learn and have insights on Scripture that are, in a sense, you know, not only different but deeper than what you get by just the analytical study of Scripture. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the main motivations and reasons why we decided to explore the idea of what could the Bible become through interactive digital media. We know what it is in paper and it's great, but with the interactive digital media and all the capabilities that it has, how much more couldn't we do to make a Bible that would be quite powerful as a way of communicating God's Word?
Mm-hmm. Now, your background and formal education and such, and you know, your vocation has nothing really to do with interactive development, as far as reading on your bio here, right?
No, I graduated as an aeronautical engineer.
Uh-huh.
And my major is in airplane design. I was hired by Citibank as a management trainee, and I had a career for over 11 years at Citibank. Mm-hmm. And I was VP of technology for a division of Citibank in New York. Mm-hmm. And wasn't until later that kind of like my hobby and my passion for the Bible took over, and I decided to leave everything I was doing and start pursuing this line of work, which,
sure,
is really using interactive digital media to communicate the Bible.
Right.
We sometimes don't even use the word software, because it's really not about software, it's about media and the power of that media, mm-hmm, to communicate the Word.
Now, there must have been some inspiration there. When I look at the Globe Bible, one thing that I've often compared it to is Microsoft's Encarta, where they were trying to add a rich multimedia experience around basically flat encyclopedic information. Was that kind of in the back of your mind as, something that, the Bible has such depth and such rich information as well. Why not do the same thing there?
Yeah, and Encarta is actually a great example of something that existed in paper and completely transitioned to digital.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nowadays, I don't think it has been a long time since we didn't have a Encyclopedia Britannica salesman knocking our doors.
Right.
Britannica, yeah, they're now also digital and compete with Encarta in a digital format for an encyclopedia. And yes, I think that technology sometimes it reaches a point that it allows you to create a product that can be so much more than what the paper could be,
mm-hmm.
that it then creates that transition. And Encarta was one of the inspirations. When we look at trends in technology in general, and even more so trends in the use of technology, when you look at the fact that we have two entire generations that were born in a digital world, use digital media over any other media, actually do not engage very well with traditional media.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see the trends in hardware technology, mobile technology, we looked at all that, and software technology also, what's happening and what's being introduced by both Microsoft and Apple, we started to realize that the time is right. I mean, this looks like the right scenario for you to start really seriously attempting to create this digital alternative to paper, which is pretty much what GLO is. GLO is this digital alternative to the paper Bible, not because there is anything wrong with the paper Bible is great, but because there are entire generations that engage digital rather than paper. And I think, the Bible has always been, following where people are. I mean, if going to different languages, going to different media, to reach people, to reach the largest number of people. And I think that going to digital is very much that. We don't want people who love the paper Bible to abandon the paper Bible. They will probably use GLO as an additional format.
Mm-hmm.
But there are generations that do not engage paper. And we hope that with GLO being a digital alternative to paper, it will become a Bible that they will be receptive to, they will be open to.
Sure.
So, Nelson, we've talked about GLO Bible on our podcast before, and actually Martin even recorded a screencast so that our listeners could get a feel for what it was like to navigate through the GLO Bible and all the resources and lenses that you provide there. But let's say you were introducing GLO Bible to someone brand new. How would you describe it to someone?
Well, I would say... I will say a number of things. I would say what I just said about, being this digital alternative to paper. And what I would add to that is that it's not just about creating a digital equivalent to paper, but really seeing in which ways that technology can communicate the Bible in new ways.
Mm-hmm.
So the experience aspect that GLO offers is very unique. Also, GLO is very convenient and easy to use. Navigating through the Bible with GLO is very efficient,
mm-hmm.
even more so than on paper. And a third thing that I think is very important, we are very interested and we'll be working with ministries throughout the life of this product in creating what we call Bible engagement tools that will help you engage the Bible regularly. Like by Christmas, whoever runs GLO after Christmas is going to get an update that will be a reading plan.
Mm-hmm.
Reading plan is a Bible engagement tool. Well, most Bible software have reading plans, but they have a reading plan that really mimics the way the paper reading plan works, which is that kind of sequence of books that are readings that you have to do over a year, 1 hour a day, and they're very rigid in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Our reading plan, you can go to any subject you're interested, like you go on our topical lens and you are interested in marriage or parenting, or your relationship with God, and you select all of those topics that you're interested And you say, okay, all the scriptures that relate to that, I want that to be my reading plan. So I want to do a reading plan on the words of Jesus, or I want to do a reading plan on parenting. So you select what your area of interest is, and then all those scriptures, and you say, okay, and I have 15 minutes a day. And it creates a reading plan for you. So that's the kind of thing that makes it unique, because now we are using technology to do something which is an adaptable reading plan, an mm-hmm. adaptable reading plan that can reflect your interest in your schedule, and give that to you. Mm-hmm. And so this is in the line of a Bible engagement tool.
Yeah, it's not
we'll
even
be creating lots of those.
Yeah, it's not even so much a reading plan, but an exploration or discovery plan.
Yes, mm-hmm. and we'll be creating lots of those, what we will call them journeys. And mm-hmm. You can have a journey that gives you a kind of like a Bible 101. It gives you a panorama of the Bible. Journeys that will explain to you the basics of your faith. And all using and leveraging all the media resources that we have on GLOW. So GLOW will have, and over the lifetime of this product, we'll have more and more of this, what we call Bible engagement tools, that will help you make great use of GLOW as a Bible. So it's not just a Bible, but it's a Bible with lots of tools that will help you engage and use the Bible regularly.
Mm-hmm. What's behind the name GLOW? Does it stand for something?
Well, no, and that was kind of intentional, because the danger with the name that you associate with something is that you would quickly think, oh, I know what GLOW is because of the name. And mm-hmm. like somebody suggested, we named GLOW the ultimate Bible software. And mm-hmm. we felt, you know, that's not what we want to do, because right. we don't want people to think that we are like other Bible software. So we chose a name that really associates with the idea of glowing, of light, mm-hmm. but doesn't tell what the product is, because the product is very unique. So we want to kind of coin a name, and in a sense, once you like GLOW and you know what GLOW is, well, that's what GLOW means.
Right.
That kind of a product. Mm-hmm. But you know, other than the fact that it reminds you of light, mm-hmm. it doesn't have any other meaning behind it.
Okay. Now this is a product that you install. I mean, you get discs, and it's actually quite a lengthy install, since there's so much material, you know, and so much content on there. But it appears that what the future is, and you kind of described it with reading plans and so on and so forth, there's an online component. At least you know, you're downloading updates. Can you explain a little bit about how that works and maybe where that's going? Is there going to be an online component, or simply a connection to the Internet that gets you the latest and greatest stuff?
Well, this release of GLOW is really, you know, was born on October 15 this year. It's the very, very first release mm-hmm. of the product, and it's a PC-only release. And but over next year, you will see a Mac release becoming available. You will see iPhone, mobile, and web. And the idea is that even if you buy GLOW today, what you buy is GLOW. It's not GLOW on PC. It's not GLOW on Mac. It's not GLOW on iPhone. And you get 5 licenses that allow you to activate the product on the multiple devices that are part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Because nowadays we realize it's a multi-device kind of society, where during different times of the day there's a different device that you use. At certain times you use your iPhone or your mobile, at certain other times you're using a desktop or laptop. And what we want is that it doesn't matter which device you have in your hands, you have a window into your GLOW with all your notes, with all your reading plan, any reading preferences, font sizes, whatever. And the idea behind it is that really you will be able to access it from whichever device uh-huh. you have at hand. And so you buy GLOW once and you activate in up to 5 devices. Today you don't see that, because the only device we have it available is the PC. But as we make those devices available, you will be able to choose to use one of your license keys to activate on that particular device.
Uh-huh.
And we plan to have many devices available over next year. And it will work in this multi-device architecture, where you may have entered your notes in your iPhone. When you go back home and you use your PC, it will be there, uh-huh. that note that you entered in the iPhone, because it synchronizes over the web. It uh-huh. connects to the web and makes sure all the devices are synchronized. So it is constantly going to the web for that purpose.
Sure. When is that kind of thing going to be available? Do you know what the time frame is for that?
Yes, most of it will be in the fall, and then fall of next year. But some of them will become available over next year. Mm-hmm. Some iPhone apps. Initially, we want to have an iPhone app that it's not the full Glow functionality. Mm-hmm. But we already give you the possibility of reading your Bible and entering your notes or accessing your notes from your iPhone, and we'll work with, and it will synchronize with your desktop. So some of that you may see like in the first quarter, second quarter, although the bulk of what I'm talking about will become available towards the fall of next year.
Okay.
So tell us how Glow is being received out there. Have you had a large response to the unveiling of Glow since October?
Yes, there was a very good reaction. Some complaining about the long installation time and the 18 gigabytes of disk that it uses. On the other hand, once people go through that, they say, well, you know, it was worth because I get so much mm-hmm. media and it's such a nice product. And what really I found that people like about Glow is the experience that it offers. And that I think is the case because that's really unique to Glow. Glow is the only product that allows you to take those 360-degree virtual tours in super high definition of the Bible places that everyone wants to visit in the Holy Land, but it's so hard to get there. And sometimes even if you're there, going into the Dome of the Rock and some of these places is very, very hard to get access to. And we have this very high definition virtual tours that in many ways is better than if you're there to mm-hmm. experience what these locations is like. So that experience, and because we have so much of that throughout the entire Bible, it's something that people really enjoy. Although I believe that over time, you will see more and more people enjoying the Bible engagement tools, and I believe also the topical, where the topical is really designed to allow you to find help when you need very quickly. You need help on a certain area in your life, or you're interested in a certain subject, find every Bible passage and resources, even online resources, that can help you with that problem, with that challenge. Mm-hmm. So I believe that over time we'll see more and more people using the topical, using the Bible engagement routines, but what we have seen that people really like is the experience side, the ability to have this experience of what the Bible is talking about.
Right. Nelson, I can't think of a better use of 18 gigabytes of hard space or hard disk space, and that's the good news. And you know, the people that I've showed it to, I shared it at a state teachers conference here in Wisconsin, and very, very favorable response. And I think the price point is very attractive.
Yes, it is. We want it to be that way. We wanted to price it at a price point that it would be very affordable to most everybody. Mm-hmm. Because we want to create a product for Christians in general, not a product that's just for the scholar, just for the seminary student, but a product that would connect, engage, and be affordable to every Christian.
Mm-hmm. I noticed reading your bio that there's a philanthropic focus to your work there at Immersion Digital as well.
Sorry, say it again.
It looks like there's a philanthropic component of what you're doing there, where you say you're planning on giving away large portions of the profits from the project.
Yes, we do have one of the things we're actually starting already to work is translations to different languages. We are working on Portuguese, Spanish. We're working on Korean and Mandarin, and those are still profitable languages, but very quickly after that, every translation you make goes into the non-profit territory. But we want to do that. We want to create this product in every language there is, because you may think, well, it's a high technology product, but you'd be amazed how technology permeates third world countries in ways that you would not imagine, either through missionaries, but also simply because people adopt technology, mobile technology is widespread in Africa, and creating ways that we can have this product be used by those populations and by missionaries, and this is something that we want to do, and we realize that all of that work is non-profit work, so mm-hmm. we will have a portion of our revenues destined to a foundation that will focus on all this non-profit work, mm-hmm. and we believe it's very important because I believe this is a format for the Bible for the future, but not just the future of the first world countries, but also of third world countries, where actually we see sometimes the statistics that show Christianity in decline in the U.S., but when you go overseas, Christianity is growing so fast in some of these countries, mm-hmm. and you really need to give those kind of tools for them because they need them. They need them very much.
Yep, that's a wonderful approach. Maybe you said it before and maybe I missed it. How many years in the making was this? I mean, there's so many resources here. And maybe tell us a little bit about the effort necessary to bring all of this together. Obviously, you did not create all of the content, so you had to go find it or commission it, right?
Yes. We started working on this in 1996. Mm-hmm. And we had a first product that was launched in 2002, which was called Illumina. And so Illumina was our first rendition of a interactive digital Bible. Uh-huh. And it was very successful. Well, we have over 600,000 copies of that product sold, and we have it in three languages. And it really was designed for the Christian family. Mm-hmm. And then we started taking it to another level and creating this product that is now this alternative to the paper Bible, focusing primarily on the digital generations that we have out there. Mm-hmm. But it has been a long journey, and through that journey, learning what does that mean to create a digital Bible, and what does that mean to use interactive digital media to communicate the Word of God. Mm-hmm. So that has started in 1996. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Nelson, can you tell us if there are social aspects in the plans for the Glow Bible, this being the social media year, really, 2009, and things have taken off so strongly in that regard. What about for Glow?
Yes, we have in our plans what we call a social component, which is really meant to be two things. One, a way of sharing. Either sharing with a group of people from the church or sharing with friends that not necessarily even believers, but you want to share with them your experience with GLO or your insights with GLO. And also sharing in the sense that if you belong to a certain congregation and the pastor knows, the pastor can then share with all of the members of the congregation, mm-hmm. maybe a sermon presentation, a Bible study, and even a devotion that you will be able to get as an update if you're a member of that congregation. So the social component is very key and something that will be integrated with this product. Hopefully, we may be able to have some level of social component to add it to the product by the fall, but the focus of what we call this social component or this social interaction on the product is going to be around the purposes of the church and really trying to help and the church, the Big C Church, the body of Christ, and all the interactions that you as a member of a church would like to have with other either believers or non-believers from your small group, from your congregation, people you're witnessing to, and have that be something that we integrate with GLO to the extent that will help you communicate. A pastor to his congregation, you to somebody you're witnessing or with your small group, and you can do that by sharing what you are creating on GLO. Like you add a note, you went to Israel, took a picture, you add a picture, a testimony that you write. Whatever you do using our product, you then can either share with the congregation, a small group, or with friends that you're witnessing to. You can add notes to the product today, and you can add notes all over the Bible. And then you can actually see all your notes as a journal, which is really neat, because mm-hmm. sometimes you want to see them all kind of like in sequence.
Yep.
And but later on, we will allow you to publish that. And publish that as a blog, or send that to a friend, or share that with other people. That's how we see this social component working in our product. Very important for the digital generations.
Very nice. Well, you certainly have a fan in me, and I use it on a regular basis, and I'll be watching with interest as you roll out some of the enhancements that you've been talking about. And we certainly wish you blessings on your journey here with the Globe Bible, and but all the best. Thanks again for taking the time with us.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, not a problem. Take care. One great thing coming out of the good folks at Immersion Digital is a discount code. We had hoped that they would provide our listeners with a discount code to get a discount or a discounted price on the Globe Bible. I don't have that information at my fingertip, but look at the show notes for this episode, and we will have it published there, how to use it, what kind of discount you get. And it's already priced rather reasonably, but there's no harm in getting a few bucks knocked off as well. All righty. Ministry resources. We have a couple things to share, right, Sally?
That's right. I just wanted to put in a little plug for all the websites out there that might have a copyright date on them. I picked up this tweet on Twitter from someone that says, check your copyright date. Does it say 2010 now that we've turned over to the new year? So I thought that was worth a plug in the ministry resources section of the show today. I did some quick checking, and I think there's a few websites I need to update as well. So check it out and make sure your copyright date is up to date.
Yep, that's a sure sign of inattention to your website if you've got old copyright information there. So quick and easy to change usually, so take care of that. I also wanted to share some information I came across actually just earlier today. I follow Dale Witte on Twitter. He is my brother-in-law, but also very active Twitter. He just got into it, and I have to compliment him on his frequency and the value in what he tweets. And one thing that he shared, he's a teacher at Winnebago Lutheran up in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, and he usually shares some kind of resource that would be of interest to teachers. And this is one that I found particularly interesting called Bible Geocoding. It's a website where you can essentially click on any place reference in the Bible, and it's by book of the Bible. And you can see on Google Maps, or if you've got Google Earth, where on Google Earth all of the locations, at least a close approximation of where all of the Bible locations are in Google Earth. Very easy to use. They come in KML format as well. I tried it out with Google Earth. Really cool. And then you've got all the features that that you can use with Google Earth as well as places of interest. And you can zoom in and out and pan and record record your steps. I think this would be a great asset for any teacher who does any kind of Bible history teaching, and probably even in Bible class, adult Bible class as well. Did you get a chance to look at that, Sally?
Yeah, I did a little bit of playing. I think it would be a really wonderful asset. As you said, I was reading a little bit about how they put it together, and they used different Bible dictionaries and other sources, and also satellite imagery from NASA, and mm-hmm. Just an amazing little project that someone took on just because of their interest in geocoding and geology courses in the Bible, of course.
Yep.
So
yep.
Very worthwhile endeavor that someone's invested a lot of time into.
Yeah, what you can do once you get to the location is they list all the verses in the Bible where that place is referenced, so you can kind of cross-reference and go back and forth with the location and the Bible reference. So very cool. Very well done. That's at openbible.info/geo. openbible.info/geo. We'll have it in the show notes as well. But they also have a topical Bible there, Twitter Bible search, and a few other things. So take a look at that site. I think they've done some nice stuff. We to our picks yet, Sally? We've got a number of comments related to a couple of our top three and bottom three picks from, was it last week we did that?
That's right.
We're going to save those for community feedback, but we're going to plow right ahead with picks for the new year. So what is your first pick for the new year?
We're building a brand new Picks of the Week page for 2010. Got to break it in right. And I'm going to kick off with something called Readability. I played with this tool. It's something that David Pogue mentioned. He's someone I follow on Twitter, a writer for the New York Times, does tech video cast as well. And this is just a very simple little button you can drag to your browser toolbar, and it basically gets rid of all the clutter on a web page that has text for reading. Turns it into something that looks a lot like a Kindle article, just real stripped down with big text, very easy to read, very user friendly, and just reduces all the clutter on the web. There's several settings that you can play with readability. You can make it, you can control the margins and the font size and things like that. And then when you're happy with it, like I said, you just drag it to your favorites bar in Internet Explorer or your toolbar in Firefox. And it should work with other browsers as well. I haven't tried it in Safari or anything else. Then the button is there for you, and when you visit any web page with text material, doesn't work well on, you know, like splash pages that have a lot of different boxes and things all over the place. But when you're trying to read an article on the web, you just push that readability button on your toolbar, and it just reduces everything down to the text that's part of that page. So you don't have to look at all the advertising and all the sidebars and things like that. You get just the plain text, and it's really, really powerful tool to simplify your web reading. I will tell you that I tried it in Internet Explorer 8. I haven't tried it in Internet Explorer 7, but in Internet Explorer 8, I didn't have the greatest luck with it. It didn't seem to want to play like it should. Worked great for me in Firefox. So if you're a Firefox user, maybe it would be worth spending some time trying it out. So give it a go, and I'll have the link in the show notes. It's not a real simple link to get to it, but something you might want to check out.
Very good. Thanks, Sally. My pick is a hardware pick from the good folks at Wacom. Wacom makes graphics tablets. Those of you that are in the graphic arts are certainly familiar with Wacom. They've made a series of what I would call consumer-level graphics tablets that are I think going to challenge the mouse. That's at least what I'm finding. This is called the Wacom Bamboo Pen and Touch. And just like the name, it's a small tablet that allows you to either use your finger on the tablet itself. I would say the active area is about 3 inches tall by 5 inches wide. So it's kind of a grown-up version of the touch pad that you have on a laptop. So you've got a little bit more surface area, four buttons, and it also comes with a pen. So if you do any graphics work in Photoshop or GIMP or anything like that, you have the added capability of using a pen. Or if you just want to be able to sign documents, a lot of times you want to put a signature in a PDF, for instance, this would enable you to do that. I'm trying it as a mouse substitute, so to speak. I've been having a lot of carpal tunnel issues, and I thought this might be a way to overcome that. And so far, very pleased with it. It's USB-based. It just sits in a stationary spot on my desktop, so there's no more or less clutter. In fact, I think I need less space on my desk to house the tablet itself. And you've got two-finger scrolling like you can on most touch pads like a Mac. It's USB-based, cost $99. Again, I think it's highly configurable, and you know, something worth trying, especially if you are an artist or are maybe feeling some carpal tunnel issues with using a mouse and can't quite get comfortable. So that's the Wacom Bamboo Pen and Touch.
Those ergonomics really make a huge difference when you have issues like that.
Time,
so,
yeah.
And you've got to pay attention to it because that is the world we live in, and something we depend on heavily is that mouse usage. And so
hopefully
that'll help you.
Yeah, and really, you don't want to cheap out on, you know, a device that you've got your hand on or your hand is manipulating, you know, like us, all day long.
Absolutely.
So, you know, spend the money where you need to and get something that's going to work well with your, you know, how you sit and the layout of your workstation and so forth. So, all right. So we've got 1 week's worth of picks under our belt. Let's go to community feedback, where we had some feedback on our picks of the year last year, along with all kinds of other good stuff from our listeners. So who is talking to us this week?
Well, I think we'll jump right into community feedback by looking at those comments we received. Not the most favorable comments that we've ever received about something we've said on the podcast, but going back to our show last week, where we did our best and worst picks of the year, we had some feedback regarding one of the picks that I made as a worst pick of the year, and that was a website called Learning in Hand, which was a site that is a site done by a fellow named Tony Vincent, who has compiled a ton of wonderful resources about handheld devices in an education setting. And I had made this a pick way back in May of last year, and raved about how great, you know, the compiled lists are and that kind of thing. But then when it came down to the end of the year and I needed to decide which ones of my picks I really hadn't adopted or made use of or didn't see a clear ministry purpose for by the end of the year, this was one that I selected because it wasn't something that I could see our Lutheran elementary schools really adopting quickly, that handheld devices in the classroom. Didn't see a real need for that in our ministry settings. And maybe I'm off base on that. I don't know. But at least my understanding of things is we aren't quite ready for handheld devices in the classroom on a large scale, at least. But there were several people, Nancy Pratt and Sue Summerford, who left comments on our show notes site, you know, concerned about the fact that I had made this a worst pick. And I think maybe kind of taking it out of context, you know, if you just look at the show notes site and you see just the text listings of best and worst, maybe you don't see, you know, what goes into that. The fact that we're really focusing on ministry applications right now, and this one didn't seem to float to the top of those lists. So, I understand their concern, and I appreciate that we have people that are, you know, keeping tabs on the podcast and giving us feedback like that. But hopefully, you know, that explains a little bit of my logic behind picking Learning at Hand as a worst pick for 2009.
You're so evangelical, Sally. I mean, they called you out, actually. So I think you handled that really well, and that's totally accurate. They weren't necessarily worst picks for all the same reasons. Some of them were clunkers. You know, at least some of the ones that I picked were absolute clunkers. But everything has its purpose, right? And everybody's going to have a different opinion. But I think you're the new Wells Tech shock jock, Sally. How about that?
That's the title I was hoping for.
You feed on controversy. So that's a new goal for this year. If somebody's going to ruffle feathers on this show, it's going to be Sally.
Oh, boy, Martin. I wish it had been you. I would happily hand that title over.
Well, I'm sure I will over the course of time, too. But, no, we appreciate the feedback, and please keep providing that. Again, one of the fun things that we do are these picks. And, again, everybody's going to have a different take or approach in how useful it would be in their particular context.
Right, and certainly nothing personal against
Tony. No, absolutely
not.
I think he does fabulous work. We should probably try, if he will, get him on the show.
Yeah, that would be a great interview, I'm sure.
So if you're listening, we're interested. We're equal
All right,
opportunity.
Moving on.
Pressing on, yes.
Thank you. We heard from our friend Gail Potretz, who is a occasional co-host with us here, Martin. She's our educational guru and technology.
Semi-regular classroom technology correspondent.
That's right. You got to have a title
yes.
like that.
That's awesome. The handle.
And she reminded us that the Milwaukee Digital Media Conference, which she's involved in, is coming up again this summer, and you can get involved and do early registration right now, and we'll have a link in our show notes to that information. This summer, they're going to be at the Milwaukee Art Museum doing their tech and education hands-on learning experience. So sounds like a lot of fun, a great conference to be a part of. So if you're interested, maybe you want to check out early registration. And Gail also left us a voicemail. I believe you have that for us.
I do. She was the first one to initiate or inaugurate or whatever the term is, our Google Voice account. And we'll give you that number after we play the voicemail here.
Hi, Martin and Sally. This is Gail Potretz calling. Happy New Year to you both. I just finished listening to the best and worst picks of the year and enjoyed that greatly. I just wanted to make a quick comment on Animoto, which is also one of my favorites. And as you know, I used Animoto for my Christmas card video this year. A neat thing to know on this is a detail, but I think a very important one. The neat thing I think about Animoto, one of them, is you can so easily match the length of your audio track with the slide you want it to go with. For example, if I had a lot to say about one particular slide, I don't have to shorten my script or try to talk faster or try to drag the picture out longer. I simply duplicate the picture, and it's a one-click deal. So you duplicate the picture, you could have one slide showing up 20 times if you have a lot to say about that one slide. And it doesn't become boring because that one slide is remixed with the 20 times or whatever that it's in there. So it's quite a neat way, a very easy way for kids to match the length of their soundtrack with the length of the particular slides. A neat trick. They made that real easy. So I just wanted to point that out and encourage anybody that hasn't used it. It's got a ton of applications. Put together a slideshow of your Harvest Fest and put it on your website. Whatever. It's so easy that anyone can do it. So we'll be talking to you soon. Again, Happy New Year.
Well, Sally, there's one in your plus column.
That's right. That was my pick. It was fun to get Gail's voicemail because Google Voice will send it to you via email. They'll transcribe the voicemail or at least attempt to.
Quote unquote transcribe.
Yeah. We got a grin out of reading Google Voice's translation of Animoto and several other things Gail had to say.
Well, not Gail. This is not Gail. This is Gil Porter.
Yeah, weren't quite spot on with that, but it was fun to see anyway. And we should give out that voicemail number. It's 405-367-9357.
Very good. Thanks, Gail. And we'd love to hear other voices of our wonderful listeners. Moving along with their community feedback.
Right. I just wanted to put in a quick plug for the HomeNet listserv. Now, many of our listeners are familiar with the WellsTech listserv, which is an email group where you can share ideas and things via email. We have another scented listserv called HomeNet for those that do homeschooling. And recently, over the Christmas break, they had a great conversation about using computers and technology in the homeschooling setting. And so if that appeals to any of our listeners and you weren't aware of it, a wonderful listserv group to be a part of is the HomeNet listserv. So thought I'd give that a brief mention.
Mm-hmm.
We also heard from another witty, Martin. There's lots of witties.
They're everywhere.
This one is Dan Witte. I believe it's Pastor Dan Witte.
Mm-hmm.
And he's down in Florida, I believe. And he sent a great link article. Maybe you want to use your readability button on this article. It's the two most important keyword phrases that drive visitors to your church website. It's from Christian Computing Magazine, and I think a real interesting read for you and something worth considering. So thanks for that link.
Yeah, very. I think very handy and very well-researched recommendations on how best to get your website found by make sure you've got a couple keywords on your website. So take a look at that. Thanks, Dan.
And then we have just a bunch of great links that were shared by Adigo, Twitter, and Delicious. So I'm going to run through these as well. Martin, you shared a link to 11 tips for improving your newsletter.
Mm-hmm. Yep, these would apply both to the written or paper, the old paper newsletter, but also newsletters that you would publish digitally. So just real practical tips for newsletters. And that's something that I think every congregation still produces. So good information there.
Definitely. At some point, I was linked to something called Fresh Brain at freshbrain.org. And it's a real trendy looking website with technology projects for middle school to high school age students. You know, their flash animation at the top says, build a Facebook app, make your own YouTube movie, create a video game. And they have step-by-step instructions to help kids get started in some of these different areas and being creative with the technology tools that are available. So if you're looking for a project, maybe middle school to high school level, this might be a site to check out.
Very good.
Jason Schmidt shared several great links with us. He is a teacher at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska, and he is very well connected and comes up with some wonderful resources we're always happy to share. First of all, he linked to a presentation about Facebook privacy and the electronic paper trail, and just some do's and don'ts, some real common sense things. I think it's kind of written from a teacher's point of view. Mm-hmm. You know, as a teacher, do you friend your students on Facebook and all those kind of things? You know, what kind of information should you be sharing with the world
right.
via your Facebook or Twitter account?
Yeah, that's a great article.
Uh-huh. So also share 20 essential tricks and skills every Skype user should know. And these are some behind-the-scenes kind of Skype settings and things that you can take advantage of to enhance your Skype experience. I know we depend heavily on Skype, Martin, and some of them I knew about, mainly because of the necessity of being able to manipulate the tool to
right.
to do the kind of recordings that we do and that kind of thing. But I think there's some great tips there. If you're new to Skype or if you're a longtime user even, you might learn something from this article.
Yeah, Skype, as much as they try, is not always user-friendly. We use it every week for the show, not without some difficulty sometimes, but there's some, I think, some good advice here on how to get the kind of tweak it so that it provides as little disruption as possible and just plain works for you. Talking about microphone settings, microphone boost levels, all kinds of just good practical advice. So thanks for that tip.
Yep. Next, Jason shared a link to an article titled, There Is Such a Thing as Free Lunch, 8 Free and Easy Ways to
Who
Begin
knew?
Educating. Yeah. And kind of the premise behind this article is that most people maybe, or at least an older kind of mindset is nothing worthwhile is free, or it's not going to stay free if it is free. And this guy just kind of pointed out some different tools, Web 2.0 oriented type tools that are really great and are really free and seem to be set up to stay that way. So there were some surprises in the list, things that I hadn't made use of that I may check out, you know, polling applications mm-hmm. and different tools for writing, you know, kind of teacher oriented. So a lot of different opinions expressed there and tools drawn out, so you might want to check that out as well. And next up, Jason provided an awesome link to free self-paced workshops for teacher professional development. These are from Concept to Classroom. And I'm trying to bring up the website real quick. They have a workshop menu covering everything from WebQuest to assessment and evaluation and curriculum redesign, inquiry-based learning, Why the Net, an interactive tool for the classroom, and a lot more. And these are totally free.
Mm-hmm.
They seemed to be very well done. I haven't dug in and signed up for any of them myself, but if you're looking for some professional development resources, this may be a great place to check out.
Yeah, it looks like they've been around for quite some time. We were talking about updating your copyright info, and if you'll notice at the bottom of their page, 2004 copyright. So they got to get up to 2010. But it looks like the resources are very timely, though.
Yes, and well done as well. So mm-hmm. check that out. And then finally, from Jason, he shared a link to an interesting website. I had to look up what the acronym was for, RFB&D, mm-hmm. and the fact that you can get a free individual membership. And RFB&D stands for Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic. So basically, these are audio versions of textbooks, and it's intended to help students that are challenged with the printed page for mm-hmm. one reason or another. But you can sign up now and get free access to these. They are in DAISY format, which I'm not familiar with, or WMA, Windows Media, and available and can be downloaded to an MP3 player and that kind of thing. So if you have students that have a need for having some audio textbooks, or if you'd like to just check it out yourself, you can use the links that we'll provide in our show notes, thanks to Jason, to go check out this website and request a free individual membership.
Copyright 2010 on their website. Awesome, guys.
There you go. Up to date. And while we're on the Twitter kick, I just have to do a quick shout out to my friend Pastor Dan Walters. Pastor Walters serves somewhere in New York State. I'm not quite sure where. I know he tweets a lot about lake effect snow. So in a snowy place in New York. And his name just caught my eye for an interesting reason. I got a copy of David Polk's book. I mentioned David Polk earlier in my Picks of the Week, and he is a writer, a tech columnist for the New York Times and on television and video presence as well. And he recently published a book called The World According to Twitter, where he compiled like 2,500 different people's tweets in book format. And apparently Pastor Walters was someone who sent David Pogue a tweet and made it into the book. I noticed his name in the book the other night when I was reading through, and then I realized I had also seen his tweet somewhere else, mm-hmm. and it was on the back cover of Pope's book. So not only is Pastor Walters in the book, but he's one of the three featured tweets out of 2,500 or so
awesome.
That is on the back cover of David Pope's book. And so there's our claim to fame. One of our Wells Tech listeners is featured on David Pope's cover, so that was pretty cool.
Very nice. Showing love to the pastor community, probably.
That's right. Small Twitter world uh-huh. that it is.
Way to go, so. Dan.
One more mention from Delicious. I tagged an article called 100 Plus Google Tricks That Will Save You Time in School, and this is from a website called Online Colleges. And the tricks cover everything from search tricks, tricks for education, Google Docs, Gmail tricks, Google Calendar, Google Mobile, Google Chrome, and more. So check out that page. You may learn something new that will be useful to you in your use of Google Online tools.
Absolutely. Just a reminder to all our Twitter users, if you tweet things that are of interest maybe to the Wells Tech community, make sure you include the hashtag Wells Tech, so pound Wells Tech in your tweet. Just a few extra characters there that you have to give up, but if you're willing to share, that's a great way to do it. Next week, we're excited to have another interview with a missionary. That's one of, I think those are some of our favorite interviews. We're interviewing Pastor Kevin Stelick from Taiwan. And we're going to talk a little bit about, we had talked a little bit about Skype. He made some innovative use of Skype as far as connecting with a congregation here stateside and sharing some ministry experiences that they have there in Taiwan. So tune in next week for that. And we're also going to talk about Bible reading plans. You heard today from Nelson Saba about the plans to beef up their Bible reading tool, you know, within the Glow Bible. But there are many other resources. So if there are resources that you maybe haven't heard of. We're going to talk about them on that show that you might want to implement in your daily Bible reading plan. This is the, you know, January is a good time to kind of think about your daily Bible reading plans, and there's many ways to do that, or even Bible listening plans, as we'll talk about next week as well. So that will be the show next week, so tune in then. And let's close the show with one of our favorite Wells musicians, Kevin Lersch. We're going to stick with the Christmas theme. We're not too far out of Christmas. His song, Welcome to Our World, from his album, O Holy Night. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We appreciate your ears each week. Come back next week and join us again.
Tears are falling, hearts are breaking. How we need to hear from God. You've been promised, we've been waiting. Welcome, Holy Child. Welcome, Holy Child. Hope that you don't mind the manger. How I wish we would have known, but long away. Son of God, perfect Son.